Hi, this is Bob Papa, voice of the New York Football Giants, and this is the Big Blue UK and Ireland podcast. Go get them, guys.
Welcome back, Giants fans, to the latest Big Blue UK and Ireland podcast in association with Andy's Man Club. Remember, lads, it's okay to talk. This episode, which is a bonus episode, we are 50% British, 25% Irish, and as you can see, 25% American. But as always, we are 100% Giants. In this bonus episode, we have Jordan with us, who is a Jackson Jaguars fan, but also a draft guru who runs both Generation Jag, a Jaguars YouTube channel, and Rogue Football, which is more on the draft slash college football area. Jordan, how you doing, mate? You all right?
I'm doing very well. Really appreciate you guys having me on. Fired up to talk some Giants football.
Yeah, I guess it's slightly different from the normal sort of Jags focus stuff you do, but I saw you dropped a Colts one earlier. Was that a bit more tough to do than the usual?
Yeah, you know, Colts, Titans, Texans, it's always fun to kind of try to put myself in their shoes. The Colts, you know, they're not as much of a hated rivalry. The Titans is really the one in the AFC South. I think everybody just can't stand the Titans. So, but yeah, no, it was good. You know, Brock Bowers to Indianapolis, I thought that would have been a hell of a fit. So we'll see how it all plays out for them. But it was interesting for sure.
Cool. Have you got any plans for draft night?
I don't. We're going to be coming back from a different trip a couple days before. I'll probably just be hunkered down in my office and just trying to keep out all the noise.
Cool. I think we're doing a live stream, so we'll have to reach out and have you on during that. Maybe have a chat about the Jags pick.
Oh, yeah. Or the Giants as well. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. Cool. So what I'll do is I'll hand you over to Kev. Kev's got a few questions about sort of the Jags and a couple other things. So Kev, take it away, my friend.
Yeah, fantastic. I just want to say thank you very much for coming on, Jordan. I've been sort of watching your work leading up to this draft, especially. And I just like love this content you're putting out there. But I just want to ask you a few questions first. So with London being the second home to the Jacksonville Jaguars, have you actually managed to get over to a game yet?
I actually haven't. I have been to London before, but not for a Jaguars game. You know, the travel for that is just so crazy and during the middle of the season. So I just haven't been able to do it yet, but I do want to do that eventually. That'd be a lot of fun. My dad and brother actually went last year, but it was like right after we had our firstborn. So I couldn't get out of here and go over there. I had to stay with the baby and my wife. So
you have to pick your battles.
That's right.
If you do ever get over here, we'd be happy to host you, have a few beers and a catch up.
Absolutely. I look forward to that.
So as I mentioned before, like, you know, I've really enjoyed your content you put out on YouTube this season leading up to the draft. And I just wanted to know, what made you get into actually producing draft content?
So I've just always loved football. And pretty quickly after starting to love the NFL, I started loving the draft because, you know, it's how you build the team for the most part. You know, free agency obviously is a big deal as well too. But I've always loved college football, always loved NFL football. It's kind of like the marriage of both worlds. And just watching guys and projecting how they might fit with different NFL teams, different schemes, all that fun stuff. And it's just such an interesting world, right? Because you have all these guys in college. Some of them are stars. Some of them are fantastic. They put up huge numbers, but then they don't have what it takes to get to the NFL. So you're figuring out, you know, what does it take? And it's a constantly evolving kind of process to figure out who are the best guys. Why are they the best guys? How are they going to fit in the NFL? And I just think it's fascinating. So I've been, you know, obviously doing Jags content for a while. Wanted to start talking more specifically about the draft and looking at other teams as well. So I've been having a lot of fun doing it.
Oh, awesome. I mean, I did hear Daniel Jeremiah say recently that, you know, The draft is all about projection, projecting where these players, how they'll play in the NFL. If it was about stats, you just line up the best person with the best stats and just, you know, pick them 1 through 10. Like,
exactly. Yeah, it's fascinating how it works and how different it can be transitioning from college to the NFL in so many different ways, right? So yeah, it's fun. And looking back at some of the stuff, like you would say in the 5 years ago, maybe a draft take I had, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? But you know, it's a constant evolution process, and that's how it's got to be to keep growing. So.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking about that, our listeners and viewers in the past have actually asked us, you know, how do you scout? What's the best way of scouting? And like, not to go into too much detail, but could you just give a brief description on like your sort of methodology of scouting and how you go about it?
Yeah. So when you first start off with a class, a lot of the top guys, you kind of have seen them if you pay attention to college football, because they usually are pretty big names from pretty big schools. So you kind of have some familiarity, but really it's, for me, I think you start with diving into tape of them, however you can get that. There's a lot of different outlets that you can turn to, or, you know, if you don't have any options, you know, just get on YouTube if you really want to watch a guy. But start there. I think that's the most important thing. And you're just trying to see, what are they being asked to do? What can they physically do on the field and all the different positions? There's kind of different requirements. Different schemes have different requirements. And then I also kind of try to take notes there, get a feel for them. And then you can check the stats to see if what you're thinking matches up with the statistical output. And then you can also cross-reference everything once you get into draft season with the All-Star games, with the combine, all that fun stuff. And it kind of all comes together to create what should be a clearer picture, but it's still a really difficult process. You see NFL teams miss picks in every draft, every year, and every round. And so a lot of times it's not necessarily the team or not necessarily the player busting, but the team not really evaluating something properly, not developing the player properly, not building the roster properly. Like, maybe you drafted a guy that would have been a really good player, but he just never got to see the field. And so it ends up kind of marring their career and things like that. So a lot of different things that go into it, but that's kind of how I, in a broad view, get this thing going.
Oh, fantastic. So how do you think then, how many players do you think you will have actually like scouted and looked at before the draft comes around?
So right now I can tell you I'm at 143. I would like to get as close to 200 as possible. It's going to be difficult, but you know, there's well over 200 draft picks. So I'm trying to get as many as possible. And even if I watch over 200, there's going to be guys that I haven't seen, smaller schools, just names that haven't come up, whatever it may be. And then also there's the guys that like to kick the football, and I'm no expert when it comes to kickers and punters and all that fun stuff, but you try to watch a few of them and see what you think. But yeah, so I'm trying to get to 200.
How many videos on YouTube are you planning to get out?
So obviously I'm working towards finishing all the mock drafts. I made the commitment to do a mock draft for every team. I'm getting close to finishing that. And at this point, instead of doing like more individual scouting videos, I'm focusing more on putting out videos that focus on an entire position group, because you're just able to get to more when you do it that way. And so I'm going to try to do every position group, probably outside of kickers and punters, before the draft. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Speaking about the mock draft, we've seen that you've done one for the Giants. So I'll hand you over to Sheehan to talk to you about that.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, so obviously I was going to ask you about the Giants mock draft. I mean, I don't know, do you want to go through, say, one pick at a time rather than just reeling them all off and then talking about who it was? But, you know, first of all, just going into that, I'll echo what kind of Kevin Craig said about having you on here. Like, thanks ever so much. Me and Kev loved our draft talk and talking like kind of college players and prospects, but obviously it's kind of our knowledge is nowhere near what yours is, and any opportunity we get a draft guru on, me and Kevin are like absolutely living the high life, so you know it is great to have you on. But the Giants mock draft, so it was done prior to free agency.
Right.
So the Giants no longer have the second round pick that was used here, but we'll still talk about the player because you never know where the player might end up falling in the draft and that. So obviously round one, you had us taking Rome Odunze, wide receiver out of Washington. What's the kind of feeling about that player and the thought process behind that pick? Obviously there's a lot of talk about if we could maybe go quarterback potentially. Was that ever on the cards for you?
You know, if I was running the Giants, I would be strongly considering it depending on who is available. When you talk about quarterback, it looks like there might be four quarterbacks gone already at pick number six. I don't know if you would consider trading up. It's just such a difficult proposition because of paying Daniel Jones. So you don't want to completely say, well, we whiffed on that and it was only a year ago, right? But I think that a smart team would figure out how to hedge that bet in some way, some form or fashion, with a player that they like that could potentially be the answer down the road. And if not, you know, you could always just go all in on a quarterback in next year's draft. It's not like there aren't any talented quarterback prospects that are set to come out. Like, you're looking at Shador Sanders, looking at the Georgia quarterback as well. So I think there's a couple guys already you can get excited about, and certainly more names will surface. But for me, Rome Odunze is a blue chip player. He is my second wide receiver in this class. I think you could definitely make an argument between him and Malik Nabers. Just kind of pick your poison, pick which one you like better. Like, Malik Nabers isn't as big, certainly, but he's just so explosive and fast and just hard to keep up with at all three levels. But Odunze, he's the type of receiver, and so is Nabers to an extent. In a different draft class, he could be wide receiver one. Like, easily. He's big, you know, 6'3". He plays at over 215 pounds. He runs in the 4.4s. He's got a lot of route nuance. He can release off the line of scrimmage against press coverage. He can go up and get the football at a high clip, you know, in contested catch situations, separates all over the field. I just think he is the type of receiver that you can build your offense around. And he also complements, in my opinion, kind of some of the receivers they already do have and pieces they already do have on the offensive side of the ball. He's going to make it easier for whoever is playing quarterback to do that at a much more efficient level.
Yeah, I know that. I think both me and Kev have had. Kev, was Nabers your wide receiver too?
You see, I kind of have 2A, 2B type thing between him and Nabers, and I very much look at players from a Giants eye. I know, so obviously, Jordan, you look at it from a more broad perspective, but I kind of like, it does creep into my rankings and stuff, you know, who fits for the Giants, who I think would fit the team better. And I think you hit the nail on the head when that with Rome Odunze, sort of like, because you've got your sort of shiftier players, your speed players with Hyatt and Slayton, and your underneath guys and Robinson, the slot sort of shifty guys. And I think Odunze would just sort of complement them so well.
Yeah, I think he would too. And Nabers would as well. Like, there's no doubt about that. But it does kind of seem like consensus Nabers is probably the number two receiver and probably will be the second guy off the board. So I think that would probably leave it as more likely that Odunze would be there anyways, which is just perfect for the Giants because I think it is the better fit overall.
So just following up on that, then I take it you're it's just a lot of smoke screen that you've said. There's been a lot of chatter over the last week or 10 days that Nabers could potentially be wide receiver one in the draft. I know there's been talk about, I think Daniel Jeremiah tweeted out a couple of weeks ago saying that he's a lot higher than teams actually think and a lot closer to Marvin. I take it, have you got Marv as the clear wide receiver one and then it's a drop there?
Yeah, I do have Marvin Harrison Jr. as the top wide receiver and the top overall prospect in this class. I think it's easier to get excited about guys when they're kind of still in the limelight. Marvin Harrison Jr. has said, I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing anything to lead up through the draft. I'm preparing for my rookie season. Like, that's what he's been focused on instead of all the draft stuff. And I commend that. I think it's an interesting thing. Like, if Marvin Harrison Jr. went to the combine or did any of the all-star type event, anything like that, or his pro day, what does he have to gain?
Nothing.
Not a thing. All he can do is potentially hurt himself. Literally, you saw last year David Ojabo tore his Achilles, I believe, at the Michigan Pro Day. So for Marvin Harrison Jr., I applaud what he's done. He's preparing himself for the NFL, not for testing as best he can in shorts, right? So I'm excited about that. I just think he has the most complete game. He's a guy that's an absolute freak in terms of his size, length, athleticism, but also a super advanced route runner. The nuance is incredible. You know, he runs routes like his dad, but he's way bigger than his dad. He can go up and get the football in the contested catch situations, has great body control. So I just think he's a perfect, almost a perfect wide receiver prospect. I think you could probably say he's not like the most dynamic yak threat in the world, but I still think he'll be pretty good in that regard. I don't think there's any real weakness to point out with Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if we move on to the round two pick now, like I said, this was done prior to free agency. Obviously, we no longer have that second round pick because we packaged that to trade for Brian Burns from Carolina. But at the time, you had us taking Bo Nix quarterback out of Oregon and Adisa Isaac edge out of Penn State. Now, obviously, we've only got the one pick now, so I'll kind of ask, I think I know what your answer will be, but if both players are on the clock, who would you go for?
Two? I would go with Bo Nix. You know, assuming there's no quarterback to the Giants in the first round, assuming Bo Nix is still there, which I kind of doubt. I think these quarterbacks are going to go early. I really do, including Bo Nix, but I think Bo Nix, he has such a, in my opinion, a very complete game overall. He does not have the biggest arm in this class, but it is big enough to make every NFL throw, and he is very accurate. He is on time. He gets the football out quickly. He also is the type of guy that, even though he has grown so much as a quarterback over the last couple years at Oregon, from a process standpoint, he still can create. Like, he is a very good athlete. He can create with his legs. He can create with his arm. He can throw off platform. He can be a playmaker for you. I think that he brings a lot to an offense, and he's already been battle tested. This is a guy who has been through a lot of in his career. You know, going to Auburn, where his dad is a legacy, and having an amazing freshman year, and then things kind of falling apart around him, having to transfer to Oregon, kind of hit the reset button. He's been through a lot. He's been through adversity, and I think that will help him at the next level. I'm really excited to see how it pans out for him. I know people aren't as excited about him because he doesn't have like the huge arm that maybe some of the very top quarterback prospects do, but I think he projects to be a quality starter in the league with his physical ability, his mental makeup, and his leadership.
Yeah, I mean, I know for me personally, I'm a lot higher on Bo Nix than what other people are. But Bo Nix has been my QB4 from the start, and that's kind of where he's at now. I think Kev had him at QB5, I want to say. But just following on from that, would you consider trading up into the first round for Bo Nix if he's still there? And how far would you feel comfortable trading up to?
Yeah, you know, if the Giants feel like he's a guy that can be their franchise quarterback, then yes, because I think when you're talking about trading a lot of valuable picks, a lot of valuable assets, it needs to be a franchise-changing player. So what position can change the franchise the most? It is quarterback. And incremental improvement at the quarterback position can make the world of difference. It doesn't have to go from like Daniel Jones, who's probably a below average starting quarterback. If you just get to average, that raises the entire team's level of play in a big way. So I think that, and you know, I know Daniel Jones has not had the fairest shake of it all, right? Like, there's been some offensive line issues. They're not always been the best receivers, but that's neither here nor there at this point. I do think that you'd like to get a quarterback you feel more comfortable with long term, and I think Bo Nix could be that guy. If you wanted to trade back up into the first round, I know that the draft capital is kind of evaporating a little bit before our eyes right now if we decide to do that, because already did do that trade obviously to land Brian Burns. So I think there's 6 draft picks left total for the Giants right now, and so that is a little bit of a risky proposition, but I would do it if I wanted to land Bo Nix, and I would if I was them. I think all of the cards kind of stack in Bo Nix's favor for being able to be someone who can go to New York and do a good job. So yeah, what would I give up to get back into the first round if he's still sitting there in the 20s? That's interesting. What pick is the first pick in the second round now for the Giants?
47.
So I think you're giving up 47. and
second maybe, next year.
Yeah, maybe a second next year, or a package of picks, a third and a fourth next year, something like that, if they have both of those. But yeah, I don't think it has to be like, you're not giving up a first round pick, obviously, but yeah, I'd be comfortable doing that to go get your quarterback of the future if you're strongly convicted. And that's just going to be up to the Giants brass if they feel that way or not, Joe Shane. But yeah, I think Bo Nix would be the type of guy that you could feel comfortable with in that scenario.
Just to piggyback the quarterback talk, because it's so interesting, like so many Giants fans are sort of wondering, what are we going to do and where are we going to go at the position? Do you think jumping back into the first round for that fifth year option is, do you think that's as big a deal as some people say it is, or do you think it doesn't really matter about the fifth year option?
It matters because it gives you more control long term. But at the same time, like, if you draft a guy and he is your, if you believe he's going to be your franchise quarterback, you probably want to sign him to a new deal after his third year anyways, because as long as, again, as long as you're feeling comfortable that he's going to be the franchise guy, you get ahead of the contract. Like, if you pay them early, you're not paying that premium at the end of the rookie deal that you would have to pay because you're paying them before, right? And you're getting it done early. You're showing commitment to that quarterback. So does it give you an advantage? Certainly. But should you end up having to use that advantage in most scenarios if that's your franchise quarterback? Probably not.
And again, I'll just jump in again. Sorry. Just like I said, it's so interesting. So you kind of alluded to your thoughts on Daniel Jones, but what is your definitive thoughts on Daniel Jones and what the Giants specifically should do? And just talk about the sixth pick. Should they move up to get someone of that, like Drake May's there at three or four? Should they, like, in theory, move up and just make that if they believe he's the guy?
In my opinion, yes. I think that when you have the chance to get a franchise-altering quarterback, which I think Bo Nix can be a good starter. I think he can be a good starter. I think that Drake May could be like a top five quarterback within the first 3 years of his career. Top five, top seven. You know, that range of quarterbacks you feel like are very elite, that are franchise lifting, that can help you win a game every single week and keep you there. He is just unbelievable with his creation capacity. The way he throws the deep ball, he attacks the middle of the field. He's underrated in terms of his athleticism. I think overall, he might not look like as much of a magician as Caleb Williams, but he's a better overall athlete than Caleb Williams. And he does do a lot of this, you know, play creating, playmaking, doing, you know, off script things with the football, throwing it down the field and running it. So, and I think he's already a little bit better in terms of operating within the pocket. And I'm a Caleb Williams guy. I think both of these guys are fantastic. They're going to be franchise quarterbacks as long as they land in the right spot and continue to develop. But yeah, if Drake May was sitting there at three and the Patriots are willing to trade out, would I do that? Absolutely. Without question.
And then just quick thoughts on, would you do it for JJ McCarthy?
No, I would not trade up for JJ McCarthy. I like JJ McCarthy. This is a guy that has a big arm, very big arm. He's a very good athlete as well. And he is a leader. He is a hard worker. He's going to kind of help establish a culture within that locker room. But there is a lot left to prove, in my opinion, for JJ McCarthy. And a lot of that was just the Michigan offense that he was in. He was not presented with the opportunities to throw the ball 30 times a game like a lot of these other guys. So I would have loved if JJ McCarthy could have stayed in college and transferred somewhere, which wouldn't have made sense. Like, you're not going to leave Michigan after you win the championship, right? And you're probably not going to stay after you win the championship and you have all this hype on you. But I just would have loved to see him grow and mature as a quarterback more. He's a guy that right now, he can't throw left. And I don't know if y'all have talked about that at all, but if you go watch, his footwork, his mechanics are incredibly wonky when he's trying to throw left, and that shows up statistically. So he's a guy that I would feel comfortable with drafting at some point in the first round, but I definitely would not trade up for him. But I do think that there's teams that might sell themselves on the idea that this guy has the arm talent, this guy has the athleticism, the leadership, all the stuff that we can look for. We just got to develop him. And he could end up being a very good NFL quarterback. I don't personally think that he's in the range of a Caleb Williams or Drake May or even Jaden Daniels right now, in my opinion. But I would not mind a team saying we're going to take him in the first round, but trading up and giving up all that draft capital, I think that's a big time risk.
Right, sorry about that. I'll let you get back onto the mock draft now. It's just like such an interesting topic, the Giants quarterback situation.
Yeah, so back onto the topic of that mock draft, round three, you had us taking Roger Rosengard, an offensive tackle out of Washington. Do you maybe see him as an Evan Neal replacement if Evan Neal kicks inside?
Yeah, and I know they went and got Jermaine Illuminor as well, right? So, and I don't think he's like a long-term option or anything like that, but yeah, I would see that, certainly. He played right tackle at Washington, and he's the type of guy that I don't know why he's just gotten so underrated in this class, because he's got multiple years of starting at an extremely high level. He's a great athlete. He's got the length and the size that you're looking for. He's technically refined with his hands. He's aggressive. Again, like, he blew the doors off the combine. I don't think anybody expected him, even me, who I've liked him for a long time. I didn't expect him to do it that well at the combine. He had a fantastic day. And so I think he's the type of guy, yeah, if you want to try to find a long-term answer at right tackle, Roger Rosengarten is a great option. And I also think that Evan Neal is the type of player, I loved him coming out in the NFL draft. It just hasn't quite clicked yet. Giants fans and people that follow the Giants should know, based on what you saw with Andrew Thomas, sometimes it can take a little bit longer. And I'm not saying Evan Neal is going to turn into an Andrew Thomas level player, but with offensive tackles, sometimes it just takes a little while to click. So I wouldn't want to give up on him, but I would like the idea of, you know, kicking him inside where he did play at Alabama prior to going out to tackle, and just seeing if we can get our best five on the field and getting something more cohesive going there.
So I take it you do see Evan Neal more as a guard than a tackle. And is that where you kind of projected him when he was coming out, or did you think he would succeed at being either a left tackle or right tackle?
I thought he would succeed at tackle. I did. I still think he can, but obviously it's been a rough couple years. I think the confidence needs to be rebuilt. Hopefully it can be, but I still think, like, that's a guy that has incredible size. He's a great athlete for his size, and it's not just like straight line athleticism. He has like rare flexibility for a guy as big as he is. So I still want that to succeed. I still want him to be able to be a tackle in this league and do it at a high level. But again, the clock is ticking.
Yeah. So moving on to day three of the mock draft that you did in round four, it's probably my most favorite pick that you've made here, to be honest with you. And that's Marshawn Lloyd, the running back out of USC.
Yeah.
It's about the sweet spot for a running back, round four.
Yeah, you know, people talk about this running back class as if it's not a good class. I don't think that's true at all. There's a ton of running backs I like a lot. And you could try to lowball it, right, and just say, there's so many good running backs, we're going to wait, and we're going to wait until late day three, maybe even just go grab a couple guys in UDFA. But if you really want to get someone who, in my opinion, can give you some of the explosiveness that you lost when Saquon Barkley left that backfield, I think Marshawn Lloyd can do that. It's not Saquon. But is he fast as hell? Is he a guy that can make you miss in space? Is he a guy that can create some juice and give that offense some energy? I think he absolutely is. And to be able to get him in the fourth round, like you said, it's one of your favorite picks. It would be a good pick. I think that he's a day two prospect, in my opinion. I think he should come off the board in day two, but the devaluation of the running back position, he had some injuries in the past. He's been healthy though as of late, but a guy who has the pedigree, was a former big time recruit, went from USC, South Carolina to USC, Southern California. And he's had a great pre-draft process, in my opinion. I think he's the type of guy that you could get excited about.
And then round five, I'm happy to always hold my hands up. It's a guy I don't know much about, to be honest with you. And that's Andrew Phillips, the cornerback out of Kentucky. Obviously, we're a little bit short at cornerback with obviously Adoree leaving. So just tell us a bit about Andrew Phillips, especially myself. Like I say, I don't know much about him, in all honesty.
Yeah, so he's a player I had not watched prior to the Senior Bowl, but he caught my eye at the Senior Bowl because he was just sticky. No one could separate from him. You know, none of the receivers were able to get open against him. So you go back and watch him at Kentucky. They play a lot of off coverage at Kentucky. I think he can thrive in a system where you're playing off coverage or man-to-man press coverage, because he has the physical traits you're looking for. He has enough length. He's a very, very explosive athlete, but he's got quick feet and fluid hips to kind of mirror movements, whether he's in press man, off man. And then I think he's smart enough as well to recognize how teams will try to attack the zone defenses. So I just think he's a really well-rounded cornerback prospect. I don't think he's like an elite run defender, but most cornerbacks aren't, quite frankly. So I think when you talk about coverage, he's a guy that can do a really good job. I now have him more in the late day two range versus round five. So I don't know that he's going to be there, but I do know this is a deep cornerback class. And so whether you're talking about getting one at the end of day two, wherever it is, I think there are going to be quality options available. Like, it's not as deep as the wide receiver class this year, but the corner group is very deep. I don't think there's as many like top flight number one corners that are going to go top 10 or anything like that outside of like a Quinyon Mitchell, in my opinion, at this point. But there's quality depth in the first round and throughout the rest of the draft, in my opinion, guys that people have been sleeping on a little bit that I think can go be starters in the NFL.
And talking about sleepers, for me, round six, you had Malik Mustafa, safety out of Wake Forest. I think for me personally, he's one of those under the radar safeties. I think me personally, feel free to disagree, but I think the safety class is a little bit like the running back class, where there's no elite prospect, but there's several good options in day two and day three. And Malik Mustafa is kind of one of them, who's probably just sitting on the edge of maybe being, like, say, one of the top 10 safeties.
I absolutely agree. I think he is probably a top 10 safety overall for me. But there's, like you said, I completely agree with you. Like the running back position, maybe no one that needs to go early to mid first round. But as you get into the late first and into the second, third round, fourth round, even the sixth round here, like Malik Mustafa, there's quality players all over the board. And it just kind of depends on what you're looking for. The thing I like with Mustafa is he can do a lot. Like, he can play in the box for you. He can play free safety, in my opinion. He's super rangy. He just brings energy to the football field. He's a playmaker out there that I think is going to compete to find a starting job early in his career. And even if he doesn't in year one, like, yeah, I want that guy on my special teams unit, no doubt about it.
Kev, back over to you, mate.
Yeah, I just want to say, when this we first saw this mock draft, you know, we kind of messaged in the group chat between ourselves saying how much we liked it and how much it was kind of like met a lot of needs, because obviously in the Giants at the moment, we are missing a wide receiver one, we're missing a cornerback two, we're missing a starting caliber safety and stuff like that, and also the offensive line. You can never go wrong with drafting solid offensive linemen who project to be starters in the league. So yeah, I just want to say, like, great job. You know, you want to come in and be the Giants GM for us to sort of site this offseason.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate all the positive feedback and all that. So I'm glad y'all enjoyed it. I try to address needs, but in spots where it makes sense, right? Hmm. I'm never going to try to reach for needs. I think that's when you really get yourself in trouble. So, tried to address needs. And fortunately for the Giants, I think a lot of their needs can be answered in this 2024 NFL draft if they play their cards right.
So just touching on that, you mentioned a couple of position groups there, but I just wanted to know, what do you think is the strongest slash like deepest position group overall in this draft?
Wide receiver, without question. I think there's going to be over 30 players with draftable grades on my big board at the wide receiver position. It's just incredible. My top 25, I just kind of went through that and looking at it. I have 25 prospects that are round four or higher right now at wide receiver. So that tells you enough right there. I think it's pretty crazy. And I don't think that's just, I think that's going to continue to be the way it goes. I think wide receiver is going to be one of the deepest positions in every class moving forward, because you now teams realize like, it's not the old days where you have two wide receivers on the field at one at a time and you don't really care about having a ton of depth behind them. You need four five good receivers now, the way the game is played. And so there's tons of good guys coming out of college that have experience, and the NFL needs them. So I think that trend will continue unless there's some crazy rule changes we don't foresee in the NFL. But yeah, I think that this wide receiver class is unbelievable. But I also think the tackle class is great. The cornerback class is great. And there's some good depth throughout in a lot of these position groups.
Fantastic. So, again, on the other side of that, what would you say would be the weakest or thinnest position group in this year's draft?
I mean, I think quarterback is always the thinnest a lot because, like, yeah, you have, I mean, maybe six guys that could be starters in this class at quarterback, which is pretty good for average class. But, you know, you're not drafting somebody in the day three of this draft expecting them to be a starting quarterback for you. But other position groups I would look at that I don't think are as strong throughout. I think that there's a lot of good defensive line, interior defensive linemen, but probably not nearly as many as there are some of those other positions we talked about. Edge as well. I think there's probably 10 to 15 guys I feel pretty good about at edge. Linebacker, off-ball linebacker is always interesting. I think there's some guys that can definitely fulfill roles, but that's probably one of the weaker position groups in this class, and it's devalued in the NFL as well a good bit. So yeah, I would stick with those ones.
Oh, great. So who could you name a couple of players that you would say that you were higher on compared to the consensus, and a couple of players that you might be lower on to the general consensus?
Sure, absolutely. Looking at my big board, I know that this isn't like a crazy hot take, but I think Johnny Newton out of Illinois, the interior defensive lineman, I think he's a blue chip player. I think he's a top 10 prospect in this class. A lot of people have bumped Byron Murphy ahead of him. Some people have Johnny Newton fall into the end of the first round. I think he should be a top 10 pick. I think Jackson Powers Johnson, the center out of Oregon, is a blue chip prospect as well. I have him in the top 10. So those are a couple guys kind of towards the top that I'm really high on, that maybe it's a little bit higher than most people. I've always been high on Adonai Mitchell out of Texas, the wide receiver, and then seeing him blow up at the combine was awesome. So I've always had a first round grade on him. Let's see. Some guys that I'm lower on. I am lower on Patrick Paul than most, the Houston offensive tackle. He's big. He's got great length. It's like he's an impressive, like, get off the bus type of guy. But I don't think he has any technical refinement in his game at all. I think he dominated lower level of competition. I wasn't impressed at the Senior Bowl. I think he's a guy that's going to get drafted for his traits that could end up disappointing if he goes too early, because he's just not there from a actual football standpoint. And then, you know, Tyler Guyton could be the same way out of Oklahoma. He's a guy that most people are projecting to go in the first round right now. I think his tape says he's a third round pick. His measurables say he is a first round pick. So where do you do? What do you do with that? I meet in the middle. I have him in the second round, but it'd be a risky pick in my opinion still, because there's just so far to go in terms of assignment understanding and recognition and hand usage, all that stuff. One guy though, you know, projecty type of player, people call him a project. Amarius Mims, the Georgia offensive tackle. I don't think he's a project. He hasn't started a lot of games. He's only played eight games. But when you watch him on the field, like, he is not a project. He knows what he's doing out there. He has violent, and he's an unbelievable athlete, just offensive tackle. I just love what he brings to the table. So, yeah, I think those are some guys you could look at that I'm a little bit higher on, and then lower on as well. I have Zach Frazier and Graham Barton, the two interior offensive linemen centers, both of them in the top 20, so that's maybe a little higher than some people have those guys. Renardo Green, there's a corner for you out of Florida State. So he's the type of guy that maybe the Giants could be interested in at some point. I have an early second round grade on him. Most people have him more like late day two, early day three. He is really sticky in coverage, really aggressive. I love the game that he has. So yeah, those are some guys that you can talk about that I'm higher on and lower on. For sure.
Cool. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up. Just quickly, Jordan, who do you follow at the college level?
Oh, my favorite team?
Yeah.
Florida Gators.
Yeah.
Gators, very unfortunate. They have been underwhelming. Yeah, you got the chomp down. That's beautiful. No, but I also did attend Florida State for a little while. So I follow Florida State. A lot of my friends are Seminoles fans, and they were a lot of fun to watch this year, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball, on offense until their quarterback got injured. But, yeah, I try to keep an eye on everything, but I follow the Gators the most.
It's interesting because, yeah, obviously I've followed Florida State now for 2 years.
Okay.
Kev, you're, how long have you been Notre Dame for?
Notre Dame since 2011.
And Shane's Penn State.
Nice. Yeah, Penn State's always putting out some unbelievable athletes. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm feeding them up there, but they all seem to perform at the combine when it comes around to it.
It's incredible. I mean, all three of those schools are a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. So, like I said, unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for today. Jordan, just before we go, do you want to just tell our listeners and viewers where they can find you and the great work that you do?
Appreciate that. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Jordan DeLugo. It's just my name, all no underscores or anything fancy like that. At Jordan DeLugo on Twitter, or X, I guess I should be calling it. You can also check out the website jinjag.com, which is where all the Jaguar stuff is, from YouTube. And you can check out the Jinjag YouTube channel and Rogue Football on YouTube, where we have all of the kind of broader NFL draft stuff and mock drafts for every team. We're almost done with the 32 teams. I probably have like a handful left to go before we get done with all that. But yeah, really appreciate you guys having me on.
No, thank you very much. Thank you. As always, viewers and listeners, remember to like this video and subscribe to us and to Jordan on YouTube. Also hit the bell to be notified when we go live. And if you're not already following us on the socials, you can find them in the description below. My thanks, as ever, go to Jordan, to Kev and to Shane for joining me, and to you for watching and listening. We're signing off. Until next time, let's go Giants.